plastic bag, drifting through the wind, wanting to start again. Do you ever feel this so paper thin, like a house of cards, one blow from caving in? Do you ever feel already buried deep, 6 feet under screens and no one seems to hear a thing? Do you know that there's still a chance for you, 'cause there's a spark in you, you just gotta ignite the light and let it shine. Just on the night, like the 4th of July, 'cause baby you're a firework. Come on, show them what you work, make them go as you shoot across the sky. Darlings, how are you today? You are listening to the Sit a Spell show. It is the 18th and it's a little chilly out there. I've got my beautiful, beautiful, beautiful effervescent, and I've got a funny story for you for that, by the way. Effervescent and titillating, fabulous, fantastic, Teresa Savina. How are you, my darling?
Hi. And you're the most spectacular, awesome, strong, powerful woman of the world, Lisa Lee.
Okay, you have to know that our listeners are probably like, oh, puke gag. All they do is say awesome things about each other in the beginning.
I know. We should just have an opening that, you know, have Josh do the opening, but good Lord, what he would say about us.
Oh boy, that'd be funny.
Yes.
So effervescent. Here's something funny for you, T.
Okay.
So yesterday I was a guest co-host on the Writer's Lounge. Mm-hmm. And Tom Rydell does that, and he does an excellent job. It's a really great show. He's got authors on there that are just fantastic. So anyway, he was introducing me, and he goes, and I have a special word for you that I bet you've never even heard before. And then he said, it's the effervescent Lisa. And I went, eh? and then he goes, and what it means is, and he did the dictionary of what it means, and one of the words is sparkles, so I thought that was kind of funny. And I'm like, honey, you do realize I say that about tea every week, right? And he goes, oh. So he thought he had me, but I had him.
Poor Tom. He tried. We have to give him a try.
Oh, totally.
An A for effort.
A for effort. But, I mean, he was so cute. He thought that, I don't know, it was just adorable. So, T, darling, what have they been up to?
Well, I think you know what I've been up to. I was sitting in a hospital bed for 48 hours. And having Harold and Maude removed. And, let me tell you, I would not wish that procedure on my very worst enemy. But The reason why is because when they did me, that sounds so kinky, the tubes that they placed in the back there, you know, they stick it in your back, and then they've got a tube that goes from your bladder to your kidney, and they had to have been up against or rubbing on a nerve.
Oh, honey.
So let's just say that Teresa laid very still for a long time, because every time I would try to move, I could move certain ways, but if I went and tried to adjust myself towards my left, there was a searing, burning nerve pain that would go from my waist down my hip and around the front of my pelvis. And we're talking tears.
Oh, sweetie.
And it was horrible. And they had me on Dilaudid or some darn thing.
I have to interrupt you just for a second. Because when you were at the hospital and you were texting me, First of all, I had to be you and try to decipher me typing to you, like you always have to decipher mine. I had to decipher yours. And at one point, you were taking dildo.
You should
Texted
have saved those texts and read them on the
Oh,
show. It would have been
I've got them,
hilarious.
darling. I've got them.
Oh my God. Well, you know, it was not pleasant. And if anybody's experienced nerve pain, it is not something that you ever want to deal with. And luckily, the next day, after my husband was yelling at doctors to take all the shit out of me, because I was in agony, they got me down to the radiology department. And God bless those guys down there, because they're young guys, and normally, you know, young guys, they've got their little things to say, you know, they're not as professional as we would like. But these guys were so sympathetic and caring, turning me from the gurney onto the table. That was like a scream fest. And then I was on my belly with my face in the pillow, thankfully, because as they were taking the stuff out and they were doing it very gently and as slow as they possibly can, I'm screaming bloody fucking murder into the pillow. And tears are pouring off of my eyeballs. And I can hear in the background one of them saying, "Didn't they give her any pain meds?" And I'm going, "Yes, right before I came down."
Oh, sweetie.
But the good thing was, the minute they got it out, the pain went away.
Oh, thank God.
So I was getting ready to do sexual favors for all these guys down there, because damn, they got rid of the I swear to you, if I ever had to live with that pain for the rest of my life, I would have ended my life. It's that bad. But today I'm doing pretty good. I'm no longer peeing blood. That's fun. And my hoo-ha isn't as swollen, you know, 'cause you get cameras and all that jammed up there. So I'm pretty happy today.
And on Vicodin.
And well, I'm always on Vicodin. But I do have Percocets just in case.
I'm on Coca-Cola.
That's good. Coca-Cola is good.
Coca-Cola is good.
But I no longer have my stones, so it's a good thing.
I'm happy for that. You've been in pain for so long. I'm so glad that it's done. So for me, I haven't done a whole lot. I worked at the theater for a new play that they've got going on. That was awesome and fun. And I had a slumber party for my volunteers at my house on Saturday. We ate pizza and stayed up far friggin' too late. But
Oh, you had it at the house.
yeah, I had it at the house.
Oh, I thought you had it at the theater.
No, Nope. Had it at the house and we ate pizza and watched scary movies, basically everything that we would have done if we were at the theater, only I got to sleep in my bed,
Which is a bonus.
which is a bonus. And last week, you and I were both high on
Yep.
prescription pain pills. And I finally get to eat solid food. I'm the happiest person ever.
And I'm
But
very happy that my healing into your colon worked.
it worked like a charm. And but I lost easily 10 pounds from just being in that liquid diet. So yesterday I was at Subway getting dinner, and I was wearing my boyfriend jeans, and they were already a little bit big on me. So I had a reverse Marilyn moment. I actually had to put the food on the ground because my pants were almost going to be on my knees.
Kind of like that one skirt that one time you were wearing.
Exactly like that one skirt. Yeah. I mean,
Yes.
and there is a lot of people at Subway.
Yes, there are. And they were thinking, "Wow, that's a new sandwich. I like it. Can I have that bun?"
Oh.
I know. It was bad. I can't help it.
You went there.
Yeah, I did. Well, you know, during my illness so far, I've lost 14 pounds. So there you go. The liquid diet seems to work when you're sick.
Yes. And speaking of sick, our little Superman, he's come down with a cold.
Aw, he gonna be miserable then.
I know. So I'm taking my level one first Reiki class on Thursday. So I'm going to use both of you as my guinea pigs.
And I am so very proud of you,
Thank you.
'cause then we get to watch you sparkle in ghost hunts.
Yay! I love sparkles, but you know that.
Yes.
We also have a holiday this weekend.
Yes, we do.
September 21st is the autumnal equinox, aka Mabon. It's
Yes.
kind of like the witch's Thanksgiving.
Very much so. What are you doing that day?
Working at the theater.
Ah, see, I'm going off with those who honor dead things. We're going on a little adventure that day that we're not going to be traveling too far because, you know, it's a little bumpy rides with me and my incision, not a good idea. So we're going to be going down to the crossroads and doing some yummy yum stuff, and then we're going to be going back to Shelley's and having a bonfire and potluck dinner, and we're going to have some fun.
Oh, I'm really glad that you're doing that. So I will be there with you in spirit, since I won't be able to be there with you in person.
I'll just bring a picture of you and we'll have you with us.
Awesome. Oh,
Also,
we have more recipes that have been added to the cookbook, by the way.
yummy. And
Yes.
pretty soon I gotta come over there and we gotta start doing these because I gotta get my camera going and taking some pictures,
That
cooking
is
some food, fattening people up.
Yeah, I'll be making the cereal.
Oh no, I'm gonna work your ass.
I know you are.
I'm gonna make you work it.
Work it, baby. I'll have
Work
to...
it, baby.
Oh, and we have an investigation this weekend, too.
This weekend?
Yeah. Remember,
Oh.
the trial?
Trial, the trial, the
The
trial.
trial run with a potential newbie.
Oh. What day is that?
Saturday, I think at 6. Okay, we're just having like a conversation now. We're not even paying attention to
Yes,
the
we
show. I'm
are.
sorry. Okay, well, with that, let's take our first break.
Well, maybe we should.
Good plan.
2013, mysteries of the past will reshape our future. Paradigm Symposium 2013 in Minneapolis, Minnesota, October 17th through the 20th. Speakers will include Scott Wolter of History Channel's America Unearthed, Egyptologist Robert Bavall, Dr. Robert Schock, and many more. Tickets are available online at ParadigmSymposium.com. Mankind's greatest mysteries brought to the present with new understanding. Visit ParadigmSymposium.com.
Unfortunately, this week our lovely Candy Ayers is off doing family business, so she's not going to be able to do our Wisdom for the Ages, but she is so awesome, she sent us one to talk about ourselves. So, giggle on back. The quote she sent for us this week is, "People only see what they are prepared to see." And that's Ralph Waldo Emerson. What do you think about that, Miss Lise?
Well, I can see how that would be. I mean, there's a... Okay, not to go back to my ridiculous marriage, but I only saw the good when obviously everybody else saw the bad. Mm-hmm. But then as far as my children are concerned, I only see the good when I'm sure there's bad in there as well. I think it's all about, you know, those rose-colored glasses in many ways. And if people have a negative view on things, they're only going to see the bad. They're never going to see the good. I mean, that's what I'm taking from it.
Yeah. And I mean, that's anything within, between, you know, religious beliefs to things that are going on in the world today. You know, if you're not ready to deal with that and see it, you're going to just turn a blind eye, and it's nothing that's going to affect you because you're not going to pay attention. But it's a real shocker then when you finally wake up to see it.
Josh said, perception is reality. Reality does not affect, perception does not affect reality. And this is completely off, well, it's not off topic, but I read somewhere, and I can't remember where, but back in the days of the Native Americans, you know, ships would be floating by on the sea, and they wouldn't see the ships. It wasn't until the missionaries went, "Hey, look, there's a ship," and explained what a ship was, and then they could see it. That doesn't make any sense the way I explained it, but I read somewhere that because they had no concept of a ship, mm-hmm. they didn't see the ship. Does that make any sense?
Yeah. I mean, it could have been just something floating out in the ocean.
Yeah.
Dead whale.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah.
And I reject your reality and substitute my own.
Right.
Yes, and your reality is, would they have a missionary position? According to what you've put into the Skype thing. Which is why we love you ever so.
Ever so.
So, should we... Should we move on?
We should move on.
We should move on. News with Lisa Lee.
Oh, me go first?
You go first, girl.
Okay. Let me pull it up. First of all, you should also know that it was a slow, witchy news week, so we were really grasping. Exiled Romanian princess arrested for cockfighting. I know that Josh is going to start really talking now.
Well, we've had haunted vaginas. We might as well have exiled cockfighters.
There you go. Princess Irina Walker, the daughter of the last king.
The
of
worst Russia. Thing about cockfighting is when it all comes to a head.
Oh, God. I knew something. It was too easy. Last king of Romania was hobnobbing 2 years ago with European royalty in Bucharest to celebrate the 90th birthday of her regal father. She and her husband, a former Oregon sheriff's deputy, have pleaded not guilty to operating a cockfighting business with her husband at their ranch in eastern Oregon. Government prosecutors warn that Walker is a flight risk because she was born in Switzerland and could be granted asylum in that country. Judge John V. Acosta ordered her to surrender her passport and told her not to leave her home country, or county, I'm sorry, except for to go to nearby Hermiston for groceries and doctor's appointments. Government prosecutors say Irina and John Walker staged at least 10 cockfighting derbies between April 2012 and April 2013, bringing in as much as $2,000 per day. Blades were attached to the bird's legs. Spectators were charged admission, and food and drink were sold, the indictment said. Irina Walker, 60, is the third daughter of former Romanian King Michael I. The 91-year-old Michael, one of few surviving heads of state from World War II, was forced to abdicate by the communists in 1947. Sent into exile, he lived in Switzerland and worked as a commercial pilot and briefly as a chicken farmer. According to a statement from the royal family's website, King Michael expressed deep sorrow about Princess Irina being arrested in hopes that the American justice system and the Oregon courts will act as quickly as possible. He does not mention his son-in-law and adds he hopes the presumption of innocence will function. The Walkers are charged with operating illegal gambling business, a conspiracy to violate the Federal Animal Welfare Act. Each of these offenses carries a maximum possible sentence of 5 years in prison and a fine of $250,000. Federal prosecutors are seeking forfeiture of the ranch.
So if you tried to insure that business, would it be called a Trojan horse? After they're done with all that, you know how people eat the skin of chickens? Would you eat four of those skins?
Oh, God.
Oh. Ew.
Would and, you call this
you know, she's news? Just, you know, what's it like to be hobnobbing with your cock? I don't know. Josh, what's that like?
It's very pleasurable, but messy in the end.
Oh, God.
Do you attach blades to it?
No, I know there's a subculture of that, but that's not my thing.
Oh, okay.
You girls may proceed. I've gotten my bad taste jokes out of the way.
Dear God. Okay, first of all, I think that's ridiculous, and I hope that they do go to prison, because, wow. But after...
If the guy goes to prison, he'll definitely know what cockfighting is.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, Teresa, why don't you go now?
From cockfighting to teen exorcists say Harry Potter's magic comes from Satan as they take on London's hotbed of evil in a new BBC documentary. Ooh. Three demon-chasing teenage girls who say London's reputation as a hotbed of witchcraft peaked with the rage over Harry Potter and their reverend mentor, who claims to have cast out 15,000 demons over his career, will be the stars of the new BBC documentary this week. In a clip from the documentary, which will debut, we don't care because it's an idiot, Bryn Larson, 18, and sisters Tess and Savannah Schnurkerback, age 18 and 21 respectively, who have vowed never to read the Harry Potter novels, according to the Express report, dismissed the notion that the magic highlighted in the books could be anything but pure evil. I think it's been centuries in the making, but I believe it all kind of came to a pinnacle, a peak with, well, Harry Potter books that have come out in Harry Potter rage that swept across England, said Savannah in a clip discussing the popular books in the back of a London taxi. The spells and things are that you are reading in Harry Potter books, those aren't just some things made up. Those are actual spells. Those are things that came from witchcraft books, added Tess. A list of dangerous spells, charms, curses, and jinxes called from the Harry Potter books are posted on the website. I'm not going to say the website. They include conjunctivitis, a curse that damages your opponent's eyesight, ridiculous, when combined with a laugh, it can defeat a Bogart, Aveda Kedavra, an unforgivable curse which murders opponents, and Engorgio, a charm that enlarges items, which I'm sure the previous story needed for their cockfights. The girls who came to London armed with crucifixes and Bibles after casting out evil spirits in the Ukraine told the Express that they want to stop British teenagers from inviting the devil in through the spells and satanic Harry Potter magic. All right, so, you know, the guy that they're dealing with here is, his name is Reverend Larson. Okay. You can see videos galore on this man on YouTube. And he's just like this evangelist looking for money. And he sits, he's got all these people in the room, and every single one of them has demons, of course. So he's clearing the smacking people and everything. And then he's taking like $200 from them.
Are you serious?
I'm dead serious. So now he's got his daughter and two other teenage girls. They're going to go make money, obviously, on a TV documentary. And probably charging these people up the wazoo. Oh, yeah.
Some people just need to be stopped. Seriously.
They prey
on the innocent and the, well, not so bright. Wow.
Yeah, that's just so.
And he's exploiting these three teen girls and filling them up with a bunch
of. They're full believers in what he's doing, obviously, because he makes a lot of money at it.
Wow.
Millions.
Well, obviously. Mm. And now he gets to be famous because he's going to be on TV. Woo.
Yay. So, let's get into your story.
Okay. Maldives vote rigging row after black magic coconut is found near the polling booth. The coconut was placed near the polling booth in an alleged bid to disrupt the upcoming elections. As political dark arts go, they don't come any darker than this. A vote-rigging row has erupted in the Maldives ahead of Saturday's presidential election amid suspicions that one party is using cursed coconuts imbued with black magic spells to sway voters' political allegiances. The claims came after a coconut, described as young, was placed near a polling booth in an alleged bid to disrupt upcoming elections. The fruit had been inscribed with a verse from the Quran and placed near the booth at a school on the remote Kafu Atoll. Oh, I'm going to use your thing. Blah, 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 blah. One of the islands that makes the Indian Ocean archipelago state. Black magic is often used to prevent people from voting or influence them on the islands. Following the discovery of the cursed coconut, police brought in a blah, 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 practitioner, while a white magician, to examine the coconut. The expert found that the black magic element of the coconut was fake. Maldives Channel Minivan News reported, because it's fake, the police are not worried, the source said. Minivan said that the source told them the 4-inch coconut had a Quranic verse written in Arabic on it, and it was lying on the ground near the school, easy for the public to see. It seems like it was a joke, just a prank, so people will become aware. According to reports, residents had previously complained about the ballot box being placed near the school, giving the possibility that such spells could be cast, CNM News reported. The Elections Commission sought to allay fears, saying that they would take responsibility should any students fall ill. In a further development reported by Minivan News, it was claimed that the discovery of the coconut was being used by President Mohammed Wahid blah, 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 party to redirect attention away from the political parties to gain votes. The election in the Maldives has been bitterly contested, with Mohammed Nasheed, former president, hoping to win outright and avoid a runoff second election.
Oh, so, if only a coconut worked.
I know. Can you imagine how? I'm just not even going to say it.
We could send coconuts. Oh my God, we're got an echo.
So, what's your next story?
Epidemic of babies thrown into trash cans. A revival of pagan custom. Get that pagan custom of exposure, Catholic deacon says. On September 5th, the ongoing rash of babies being flushed down toilets, abandoned in dumpsters, or thrown in trash cans signals the return of an ancient pagan practice completely compatible with our abortion culture, according to a prominent Catholic deacon. This situation amounts to a modern resurgence of the ancient pagan practice once called exposure, wrote Deacon Keith Forner in a recent article. Unwanted babies were left out on rocks to be eaten by birds of prey or taken by slave traders. that brutal culture indifference came to an end with the rise of a new faith. It was the Christians who saved these babies. Oh, I got comments on that. And transformed these cultures from cultures of death into cultures of life, wrote Fournier. I'm just going to stop there because it's not just pagans. Yeah. Throughout history, all cultures, all religions have done it. And it's increasing nowadays because we have more poverty, and we have young teen moms who don't know what they're doing, you know, can't deal with it, and or, you know, don't want to be found out, so they're dumping their babies. It has nothing to do with their religion.
Oh, my God. I hate people sometimes. All right, with that, let's take our next break.
Yeah.
Carl Sagan once wrote that the questioning mind needs to be instilled with both skepticism and wonder, for the universe is a pretty big place, filled with undelved mysteries, sciences, and life that we've barely begun to comprehend. Every month, Intrepid Magazine brings you both the wondrous and the skeptical. Intrepid Magazine focuses on science, metaphysics, UFOs, politics, conspiracies, and unexplained phenomena, all offered up by Intrepid's cadre of writers and contributors, comprised of a host of seasoned authors, pundits, and recognized names in their fields. The universe is indeed a big place, and where other magazines leave off, Intrepid Mag is just beginning. Subscribe to Intrepid Magazine today at www.intrepidmag.com. That's www.intrepidmag.com.
The sun in your eyes and the wind in your face. To heaven you rise in a holy embrace. Your feet on the ground, your head in the clouds, and you're wondering if you're ever coming down. In an instant, the mysteries of life will unfold. The myths and the dragons of time will explode. Here's to a real understanding of truth, for compassion and grace to be given their chance to. Unveiling the secrets of songs to be sung. Waters of life flowing soft to the touch. Wisdom remembered, have we forgotten? Oh, so much. To the golden shores of paradise. Raise up your mind.
Okay, welcome back, my darlings. We now have the most amazing guest on that we've had before, and we've gotten so many emails that we had to have him back. So, welcome back to the show, Mr. Scotty Roberts. How are you, darling?
Well, I am good, Lisa. How are you? How are you doing, Teresa?
I'm alive. After surgery, I'm alive.
Oh, all right. They didn't, remove brains or hearts or anything like that.
Well, no, see, there's no brain to remove, but there were kidney stones, so.
Oh, man.
Yes.
Yay, so, Scotty.
Yes, ma'am.
You have a new book coming out.
I do.
I want to hear all about it.
All right. Well, this is a little different than the first couple of books. As you know, New Page Books is my publisher. And we did The Rise and Fall of the Nephilim a couple of years ago. Well, it was actually last February. And then this February, we had The Secret History of the Reptilians came out. And in both of these books, I made mention, more in the Nephilim book, I alluded to Moses, the biblical Moses, because, especially when you look into the account of the Nephilim, it's found and sourced in the book of Genesis, which Moses was said to have written. So I did a little bit of a biography on Moses and why I believed he was an historical character who actually existed and what he would have brought to the table, being thoroughly Egyptian when he wrote these books. He was not a Yahweh worshiper. He was not a Jehovah worshiper. He was not a Jew. He was Egyptian thoroughly. And after the Exodus in his 80s is when he really created Judaism out of whole cloth. And so I wanted to see why he would have written what he would have written about the Nephilim. Then in the Reptilians book, I really trace the Reptilians back to the mythology of the Anunnaki, much ado about the Anunnaki in ancient alienist circles and mythological circles. So I went back there and found so many similarities between the ancient Sumerian texts of the creation of man and the Genesis story, that it seemed to me, and through my research, finding that Moses really borrowed that information from the Sumerian culture, which was written 1,500 years earlier, and he incorporated that into creating Judaism and writing the things he wrote. And he also, of course, brought in Egyptian religion and Sinaitic religion, Canaanite religion, all these things he would have learned the first 80 years of his life. So all of that to say, during the course of writing those books, I have a very good friend of mine, Dr. John Ward. He is a British archaeologist that works and lives in Luxor, Egypt. And he's been there for about the past 15 years. And we collaborated a bit on Moses to get his take. I wanted his archaeological, anthropological take on Moses and the whole story. And he had a little different theory than I had. And we toyed with the idea of, you know how you do, you say, hey, we ought to write a book on that together. And we toyed with that for about 2 years and then finally proposed it to New Page Books and they accepted it. And so we went ahead and we wrote that book. It's called The Exodus Reality. And it's subtitled Unearthing the Real Moses, Identifying the Pharaohs, and Examining the Exodus from Egypt. And in this book, John and I present two different theories on who we believe Moses was based on our research. And they're really only separated by about 80 years within the same royal houses in the 18th dynasty of Egypt. And we have many things that we agree on and many of the elements of the story that we found ring very true. For instance, I was in Egypt in January and February for about a month, and John and I went on expedition, if you will, to do some research on this book and seek out all these different sites. And one of the places we went was we drove out to the Sinai Desert. We didn't cross the Red Sea miraculously, by the way. We we went in the tunnel beneath the Suez Canal, and we were the guests of Sheikh Barakat there, the sheikh of the little region there where this little mountain is. It's called Serabit el-Khadim. And this mountain is surrounded by other mountains that were all mining sites for the ancient Egyptians, where they would mine turquoise and they would mine copper and things like that. And atop Serabit el-Khadim, which is a low mountain plateau on the top, Imagine how those mountains all look in the Sinai Peninsula. You've seen pictures of those things. Is the old temple to Hathor. And Hathor, of course, being the cow or the calf goddess of Israel. Of Egypt. And when you think of the golden calf story related to the Israelites after the Exodus at Mount Sinai, you get the idea of the relationship between these two places and why Flinders Petrie, archaeologist of the turn of the last century, actually thought Serebet El Khadim was the mountain of God or the Mount Sinai of the Bible. And so John and I went to places like this, and we went to all these different sites in Luxor and Cairo and Memphis and places like that. And so we built our cases for our two different pharaohs and our two different characters who we thought aligned with who Moses was historically. And I believe that I know within a shadow of a doubt, just a slight shadow of a doubt, that I believe that Senenmut was a man who became Moses, or known as Moses later in his life. That was his birth name, but then he was given an Egyptian name, and he was raised as Senenmut. And Senenmut was actually the man who became the grand vizier of Egypt beneath Pharaoh Hatshepsut, the female pharaoh of Egypt. And she granted him 92 royal titles, one of them being the hereditary crown prince of Egypt. He was the grand royal architect of Egypt. And when you look at the dates, for instance, I went to the biblical passages about Moses. And a lot of people say, oh, you went to the Bible, you can't rely on the Bible's history. Well, and I asked the question, well, why not? And they say, well, because it's a book of faith. And I said, well, if you discard every ancient book of faith that we use to establish dating systems, you'd lose 98% of the source materials we have to establish history. Just because it's a book of faith does not mean it also had history recorded in its pages. And there is a rock solid, if you will, quote unquote, verse in the Old Testament. It's in the book of 1 Kings, chapter 6. It says, on the day that Solomon, the son of King David, King Solomon dedicated the temple in Jerusalem, it was the 480th year since the Exodus. Now, if that is accurate information, we do know that Temple 1, even though there's some dispute about the existence of Solomon, the existence of David, and these biblical characters from a faith standpoint, which, by the way, is being done away with more and more, every discovery they're making, even recently in Jerusalem, the Temple 1 would have been built right around 966 BC, give or take a few years in either direction. And if you do your math, you end up in 1446 to 1445 BC is the date of the Exodus, if that dating system is correct. Then you go to the Egyptian chronology, which are all over the place. There's five or six different chronologies of the kings of Egypt that, depending on whether they count this guy as a pharaoh or that guy as two pharaohs or that guy died or whatever. So they shift around 20 to 40 years in either direction. And sometimes they omit certain pharaohs altogether, saying, well, no, he wasn't a pharaoh at all. And so you end up with all these dates that are all over the place, but I use the accepted Oxford chronology of the kings, and with slight variations in the dates, you know, when you go back 3,500 years, it's easy to do. You really end up with this pharaoh and these people as being the people who fit the case so circumstantially and so perfectly. It's speculative, it's circumstantial, but when you start lining up the facts with the biblical history, plus what we know in Jewish history and Jewish traditional writings about Moses, you start finding that these characters line up. And then you have to ask yourself the question, is this who this really was? And so I believe the man was Senenmut. And you'll have to get the book to read more about that and read John's theory.
That just sounds so fascinating. Where can people buy your book, and when does it come out?
As my publisher would like to say, it will be available everywhere books are sold. You'll be able to get in the bookstores. You'll also be able to go, the easiest for people is Amazon.com, BarnesandNoble.com. And the book is to be out officially, the release date is October 22nd. But it will be out about 3 weeks before that to people who pre-ordered it on the online sites. And we're also at the Paradigm Symposium this year, October 17th to the 20th. Dr. John Ward will be here. We're going to be doing a book release party at the event.
Oh, wow. So how do people get into the symposium?
The symposium. That is, you just go to paradigmsymposium.com. And you can find our lineup of speakers. And let me just say very quickly, we've got Robert Bovall, Egyptologist. You've seen him on Ancient Aliens. You've seen him on all the Egyptian documentaries. We've got Dr. Robert Schock, who's been on all those things as well. We've got Scott Walter from H2's America Unearthed. Maridi Jones, Larry Flaxman, L.A. Marzulli, Nick Redfern, and the list goes on. We've got about 18 speakers this year. And wow. And if you go to the website, you can go to PayPal and buy your tickets there. You can call the phone number that we have on the site there, and we can run your cards over the phone as well. So, and for your listeners, if they call in to the number on the website, your listeners, I will give them a 20% discount on their tickets.
Oh, my gosh. Scotty, thank you.
You're welcome.
Oh. Well, as always, we love having you on the show, but this is just a bonus.
Here, I'll just throw out that number. If anybody's writing it down, you go to paradigmsymposium.com. The number's all over the place. But if you want to just write it down, I'm local to the Twin Cities, so it's 651-468-8115. If you call that number, you'll get me directly, and we'll run your cards.
And we'll put you all over our websites and Facebooks as well for those that didn't have time to write it down. Scotty, thank you so much for being
Fantastic.
On our show tonight. You were delightful as always. And T, it's been a fun show.
Yes, thank you very much.
Nice hearing from you, Scotty.
Yeah.
Nice to talk to you, Teresa.
As quiet as I am.
Sorry, I just talk too much.
So we will be here, same time, same place next Wednesday. Enjoy your Maybon. Remember to always take care of each other. Do something good for someone else. Do something good for the world and make a difference. Remember, you are perfect in absolutely every single way. Don't let anybody tell you any different. And remember to always, 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 my darlings, to take back your light. Blessed be.
Sometimes it's hard for me to understand, but you're teaching me to be a better man. I don't want to take this life for granted like I used to do.
Cytospell is a 1201 Beyond production. Visit 1201beyond.com for more great shows.